All right. When was the last time, just think about this. This is for your own thought exercise. But when was the last time that you were encouraged to be greedy or prideful or lustful or anxious or discontent, or you were expected to exercise idolatry or selfishness? You know, we live in a world that, all these things have a couple of things in common as we look today. First off, they're all sin, right? There are direct commands in Scripture regarding each one of those. But they are also the potential of a manifestation of materialism in our lives. If you look through Scripture and you look at all of those, there is some command in regarding each of those sins that relates back to how we handle money, possession, finance in our lives. You know, and it's no wonder that we are encouraged to do this. I mean, if you look, if you watched the TV this morning, if you looked at a newspaper, if you took some time to review your electronic device before you got here, you would have had to deal with, hey, do you have enough? Do you have enough to retire? You deserve to relax and take that big vacation that you ought to do. You know, if you're going to be successful, you really need these 10 things. Hey, everybody has one. You ought to, too. Aren't you tired of that clunky old, whatever it is, house, dishwasher, bicycle, RV, boat? And oh, by the way, you need to look out for number one, because nobody else is doing it for you, right? All of these things we are constantly hit with. I mean, you can't drive down the road without seeing a sign along the side that says, hey, you need this, or hey, I can take care of this for you to help you with one of these things. You know, interestingly enough, we don't find the word materialism in the Bible. It's just not there. But you hear a lot about it in Christian circles. I don't know about you, but this being a little hobby of mine, I listen to other people's sermons. And there is, if you go on the web and look at people's catalog sermons, you will almost always find a sermon in their repertoire on materialism. So this is something that we as believers deal with on a daily basis. And so, from my standpoint, materialism is a good catch-all term for the things that we're going to discuss today. That all of those things that I just mentioned can get covered under the broad umbrella of materialism. And so let me define materialism for you. And actually, I'm going to use a secular definition, because again, we don't find the word materialism in the Bible, but I think the secular definition actually captures it pretty well. If you type define in your Google search engine, it will kick out a tendency to consider material possessions and physical comfort as more important than spiritual values. Well, that's pretty good, actually. Webster's says it is a preoccupation with or a stress upon material rather than intellectual or spiritual things. You know, so we've all seen this. We've seen a tendency to consider material possessions and physical comfort as more important than spiritual values. And so today what we're going to look at in regard to materialism is we're going to look at the root, the manifestation, and begin to investigate the solution of the problem of materialism for us as a group of believers. So, what's the problem? There could be a lot of things, but I'd really like to try to get down to the root of what it is that is the problem in regard to materialism for us. And so, how many of you have heard, just by show of hands, the statement, money is the root of all evil? Most of you, right? You've heard that. Well, let's do a little thought exercise here and see if that is really true. I brought some props. I I have here, it's really hard to see from the distance, but I have here a little bronze coin. It's about 2,100 years old. It is a lepton. And most likely, this is the type of coin that when Jesus was sitting at the temple watching people put their money into the offering box, the widow that came along and put in all she had dropped one of these or two of these into the offering box. The fellow that issued it was, at the time, the king of Judea, potentially also the high priest. So, is this little piece of bronze that's got a wheel on one side and a scepter on the other side, is this good, bad, or indifferent? Indifferent. Okay? All right. This is just a piece of bronze. I have here a really big quarter. Okay? Face value, 25 cents. It is silver. It's put out by a government that some would say is God's manifestation of Christian government in the world. You know, whether you believe that or not. Is this big chunk of silver, and this is silver, it's, fine silver. Is this chunk of silver good, bad, or indifferent? Indifferent. Okay. Piece of silver. I have here a little gold coin. From a country that some people might consider repressive. It's a Chinese coin. And they use gold sometimes to make coin for themselves. So is this piece of gold, which is maybe worth about 130 bucks, is it good, bad, or indifferent? Indifferent. Lastly, I have here a bill. The largest bill ever, denomination bill ever issued. It is for $100 trillion. and it was legal tender in Zimbabwe. This is just a compilation of basically linen is what they use to make paper money so that it lasts. Is this piece of paper here good, bad, or indifferent? Indifferent. Okay, excellent. All of these things are neutral things. They are not good or bad. They just are. So the question is money really the root of all evil? So let's take a look at what Paul had to say about that and what we find here. 1 Timothy 6:10, Paul says, "For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some, by longing for it, have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." Okay, money in and of itself is just a material thing. It's a seashell. It is a fur. It's maybe vegetables that come out of your garden. Could be gems, precious, we've seen here, linen, electrons. Money is just a material thing. It is something that man has assigned a value to in order to accomplish a purpose of theirs. Okay? So this is just something that's created. There is nothing inherently good or bad about it. And so, as such, I want you to understand as we look at materialism that it is not money that's the problem. Money isn't good or bad. It is not evil in and of itself. It is morally neutral. It's something that God created that we put into a different form and we use for a purpose. So, money itself is not the problem. The other thing I wanted to note is in the Bible, having money, just having money, is never condemned. And it doesn't matter how much. The people in Scripture where you see money used are never condemned for having money. Now, they are condemned for their use of and their view of money as we go along. And that's what it is that makes our possessions either good or evil. It's our view of them or our use of them that assign them moral value. money and possessions, just like everything else that God has given us, sinful man has figured out how to corrupt and to pervert. Look at Romans 1:28-31. It says, just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind to do those things that are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents without understanding, untrustworthy, unloving, and unmerciful. And although they know the ordinance of God, that those who do such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but they also give hearty approval to those who practice them. So, here we see, in a nutshell, that as the world has taken what God has provided it and put it to use, we have figured out, in our depraved mind, we have figured out how to corrupt and pervert everything that God has provided, and money and possessions no less than anything else. And unfortunately, we as believers are still afflicted with a sinful flesh. You know, we won't get rid of that until glory. Now, hopefully we're all struggling with that as we go through our daily lives, that we are actually working to bring our flesh under control and under the Spirit's control, but we are still afflicted with that sinful flesh. And so just like all the other topics that we've been addressing in this class, when we're not walking in the Spirit, when we're not dwelling richly in the Word of Christ, then we're walking in the flesh. And we have a tendency, when we walk in the flesh, to do those things that the flesh wants us to do. And so we manifest these things that are condemned by God, that God says, hey, don't do this. But we manifest those when we walk in the flesh. So, the root of the problem here, again, is not money, but it is the fact that we find ourselves way too often walking in the flesh, and when we do that, we begin to demonstrate the attitudes and actions that God has condemned. Now, in regard to materialism, we cannot blame the world for their stance on this. If you think about it, they have no place else to turn for their livelihood and their comfort and security and their hope other than material possession. I mean, they don't acknowledge God, as we saw in the Romans passage. And so we can't blame them for doing that. And I mean, we can blame ourselves for doing that, but as we step back from what God has called us to do, then we can find ourselves doing these very same things. So today what we're going to look at also are some of the manifestations of materialism that show up as in the Bible as the condemned uses of money. So this is not going to be a happy, uplifting message, okay? These are all things that we do. And so what I'm going to do is put these in terms of what this looks like to us, and then what God has said about and actually named as specific sin. And so, as we've done with other things, we want to call it what God calls it. Right? First off, this is sin. And we ought to just name it what God calls it instead of making up some nice, comfortable term that makes me feel better about my sin. Right? So, here we go. First off, putting your faith and hope and finding security in material resources is condemned. 1 Timothy 6:17 says, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Again, note here that the having of wealth is not condemned, right? The rich guy isn't instructed to get rid of all that he has so that he will be righteous before God. That's not the commandment here. The wealthy are just warned not to put their hope in money, because it's what? It's uncertain. And we'll look at a little bit in a little bit about why it is so uncertain. The other thing is that the security that you find here is imaginary. Proverbs 18, 10 and 11 says, "The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous runs into it and is safe. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall." Where? In his own imagination. So if you believe that you're going to find your hope and your security in riches, you are in for a rude awakening, because they are uncertain, and it's only in your own imagination where you are going to find that hope and security. So, looking to money and possessions rather than to looking to God to provide our hope, our security, our peace, our comfort are all condemned. And so what's that called? Well, first and foremost, it's called idolatry. You know, any time where we find ourselves worshiping the created rather than the creator, or worshiping the provided rather than the provider, that's idolatry. We see it in this same passage in Romans, Romans 1, 22 and 23. Sorry, didn't turn there. Says this. That would be Romans 1. Says this, it says, "Professing to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for an image in the form of corruptible man, and of birds, and of four-footed animals, and crawling creatures, and dollar bills, and gold coins, and big quarters," all of those things. It's idolatry. We have put those things ahead of the Creator. And so, again, materialism at its root is idolatry, and we ought to view it as such. The other, another condemned thing, or another area of sin where we often see material resources and possession come into play, are in fear, anxiety, and worry. And you think about it, Hebrews says, keep your character free from the love of money, and be content with what you have. And if you go down into verse 6, it's because, have no fear, basically, because what's man going to do to me? Because God's in control. He's not going to leave you or forsake you. Anxiety. Be anxious for nothing. That means if you are anxious for something, then we are falling into the area of sin. Worry. The situation that Jesus is relating here in regard to the fact that people worry about what they're going to wear and what they're going to eat and all of those kind of things. Hey, don't you know that God feeds the birds? Don't you know that flowers look pretty nice? Actually, they look better than you. And so don't worry about those things, because they are just, because God's going to provide and God is going to care. So, as we look to the stuff as our hope and as our security, that's not good. That's idolatry. And as we look to our stuff rather than the provider of that stuff for our potential security, peace, and comfort, that is sin. Because it manifests itself in our lives in fear, anxiety, and worry. So, don't be one who puts your faith and hope in material resources. Okay, that's one. Another one, and this one's a broad one, is being uncharitable and hating to give money away. Now, this manifests itself in several areas in our life, and let's take a look at each one of those. First off, the fact that we don't care for God's purposes and priorities in regard to our material wealth. Malachi says, will a man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. But you say, how have we robbed you? In tithes and offerings. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, so that there may be food in my house, and test me now in this." So God expects us, and we're going to spend a lot of time next week talking about what God expects us to do with the material resources that He has provided us, because not only does He tell you not to do this, but He gives you a list of things to do with it instead. It's that put off, put on. And in this case, we don't care for God's priorities. We don't want there to be food in His house. And so we're uncharitable toward God. We actually rob Him by not providing Him, in this case, their tithes and offerings. So not caring for God is one way that we demonstrate uncharitableness. Sorry. God doesn't need us to care for Him. Not caring for God's priorities is one way for us to demonstrate our uncharitableness. Not caring for our immediate family is another way to demonstrate our uncharitableness. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, "But if anyone does not provide for his own family, and especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So if we are not charitable, if we are not providing the things God calls us to provide for our immediate family, that's sin. We see it also in the account where Jesus is talking, and basically the situation where people would set stuff aside and say, "Hey, this is set aside for God," but wouldn't take care of their father and mother because, "Oh, this is God's." Now, whether it really made its way to the temple or not is somewhat debatable, and I think that that was part of the situation there. But that we set things aside and we don't honor our family with that, that is condemned. Another one is just not caring for people. And I don't care if that's within or without the church. I think Scripture is relatively clear that as people come across our path, I mean, that was the whole point of the parable of the Good Samaritan, right? Was define who is your neighbor. And your neighbor is anybody that comes across your path that has need of a certain level. That's outside the body. There are specific commands that we are to care for one another inside the body in regard to our physical needs as well. And we see that in 1 John. It says, "But whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him?" So specifically in this case, if you see somebody within the church that is in need and you close your heart, then where is the love of God manifest in your life? So let's name this one. You could name it uncharitableness, but I'm going to call it selfishness. And in each of these instances, I am of the opinion that the root of our uncharitableness is our selfishness, that we want to take that thing that we should be providing to somebody else and using it on ourselves. And that is just selfish. Proverbs 3, 6 through 8 says, "Do not eat the bread of a selfish man or desire his delicacies. For as he thinks within himself, so he is. He says to you, 'Eat and drink,' but in his heart is not with you. You will vomit up the morsel you have eaten and waste your compliments." You know, so the selfish guy is saying, "Hey, eat up, have it," but he's grumbling. He's complaining. And he's not with you in your enjoyment of those things. And ultimately, Philippians 2:3, we've all heard this, "Do nothing from selfishness and empty conceit, but with humility of mind," what are we supposed to do? "Regard one another better than ourselves." And so being unselfish or being charitable is something that we ought to be doing. So, don't be uncharitable. Don't be selfish. Another one that's condemned is pursuing the acquisition of money at all cost. And also, while you're doing that, boasting about what you've got and what you do for a living. You know, James 4:13 through 16, it says, "Now come, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit.' Yet you don't know what your life will be like tomorrow. For you are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord's will, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. 1 John 2, 15 and 16 also says, do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and what the boastful pride of life, that having, you know, boasting about what you have and do is not from God but is from the world. This is pride at its most base, right? Psalm 10:4 says, the wicked in the haughtiness of his countenance does not seek him, and all his thoughts are, there is no God. We think we are the ones, through our own efforts, through our own resources, through our own cunningness, through all of the things that we can do, cause the good outcome. And ultimately, in doing that, we have missed the fact that it's actually God that provides the wealth. And oh, by the way, not only does he provide the wealth, he provides you the ability to get it. Okay? So from bottom to top, God is the one that provides. He provides you the abilities. He provides you the wealth. And so as we get money in disregard to God, and as we boast about what it is that we have and do, at its most base, this is pride. And it exercises itself in our lives often. Another condemned one is to be a hoarder. Somebody that hoards stuff, just collects it for whatever reason. Mostly that is for security. You know, if you start digging down into it, they believe that by having stuff and by having more and more stuff, they are secure and more secure. The situation here in Luke, and he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. And then he tells them about the rich man that was very productive. And he said, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? And he says, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build larger ones. And then I will store up all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But what's the outcome? Oh, you fool. Don't you know that tomorrow night you're going to be accountable before God for what you have done with what he has provided? So the man who stores up treasure for himself is not rich toward God. Just like it says at the beginning here, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. And so this is greed. You know, Psalm 10:3 says, for the wicked boasts of his heart's desire, and the greedy man curses and spurns the Lord. Hoarding is only one form of greed. If you look throughout Scripture, literally greed is just to desire more. And it's often translated as covetous. It's interchangeable between greed and covetous, depending on what verses you're looking at. And so this also goes to the base of why people are uncharitable, lustful, envious, and discontent. Because they want more. They have a desire to have more. And interestingly enough, if we look in Scripture, we see that greed is oftentimes lumped together or linked together with sexual immorality. So this desire to have more manifests itself in many, many ways in our lives, not only in regard to us getting material resources and possessions, but in the way we treat each other and look for satisfaction in our flesh in regard to sexual immorality. And those verses that are listed there are several of the places where we see immorality and greed linked hand in hand. It's just another manifestation of our fleshly desires to have more of whatever it is. Pursuing self-indulgence and comfort is condemned in Scripture. James says, what is the source of all of those quarrels and conflicts among you? Is it not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members? You lust and do not have, so you commit murder. You are envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and you quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask God. You ask and you don't receive because you ask with the wrong motives. Why? So that you may spend it on your pleasures. This is lust at its most base, covet. And those, again, lust is literally a strong desire. And it's using what we have been given, what we have been provided. And in this, for the topic of this lesson of materialism, using material possessions to satisfy our own fleshly desires rather than to satisfy God's purposes for what He has provided us. Lastly, we love money. You know, and that is that goes to the subtitle at the front of your lesson there is materialism. What's not to love? Money's not to love. Okay? 1 Timothy 6:9 through 10 says, "But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." So we are not to love money. It's the love of money that is the root of all sorts of evil. Hebrews 13:5 says, "Make sure that your character is free from the love of money and be content with what you have. For He Himself has said, 'Never will I desert you, nor will I ever forsake you.'" You know, our love of money manifests itself in a lot of ways. I'll name two here. One is discontent. We're basically not satisfied with what it is that God has provided us. We don't believe that what He has provided is sufficient for the situation that we find ourselves in at the moment. And so we are discontent. It also manifests itself in our stating to ourselves and others, "Well, only if I had this would I be happy." You know? Well, that's one of those loops that just keeps going round and round and round. You know, because the guys that are millionaires, they always say, well, what is enough? And it's always just a little bit more. And so that discontent with where you are. It also manifests itself often as envy in our lives. And envy, as we see defined in Scripture, is that feeling of displeasure at the advantage or the prosperity of others. Do you find yourself at a spot ever being upset that somebody else has gotten something that you really, really wanted? Or is doing better, whatever that means, or whatever that looks like to you, than you are? That's envy. And that is something that we are to steer clear of. Okay. Condemned uses of money. These are things that we need to avoid in our walk as believers. We need not to be people who are finding our hope and our faith and our security in material resources. We need to be people who are not being uncharitable. We need to be people who are not pursuing money with all of our heart, mind, and soul. And then, oh, by the way, boasting about what that was that we collected as we were doing that. We need to be people who do not hoard. And we need to be people who are not self-indulgent and living for comfort at the moment. These are all manifestations of materialism in our life. So, on that happy note, you go, well, what is the solution to all this stuff? And so today we're going to begin to look at a little bit some of the things that we can do as a set of believers that will help us battle this thing called materialism, that will help us battle these sins in regard to our material resources, these sins of pride, of greed, of lust, of envy, of selfishness. And so let's take a look at that. There are three things I think that we need to understand. First, we need to understand who God is. We need to understand that He is sovereign and that he is the creator of the universe, and as such, that he owns everything. Psalm 24, 1 and 2 says, "The earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the worlds who dwell in it." That's pretty all-encompassing, no? Right? The earth, all it contains, and those who dwell in it. That's pretty much everything. And why is it that he, why is that the case? It's because he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. Because God made it, it's his. And because, as we know, God created the universe and everything in it is his. Now, in his sovereignty, and this goes to, we need to understand that God is sovereign, which we have spoken about here as a topic, I believe, before. In his sovereignty, he may choose to give you a lot or a little. God's sovereign. He can do what he wants. But as we understand his sovereignty, and as we understand that he's going to give us a lot or a little, we also need to understand that because he's sovereign, that that lot or a little is enough for the situation that you find yourself in. That he has given you what you need for the situation at hand. Now, again, we can move that all across our lives. Here we're talking about that in regard to money and possessions. God has chosen, and God will choose, to provide exactly what we need for the moment. The other thing we need to understand is, and this goes back to the uncertainty of riches or the imagination of the security that it provides, we need to understand that because God owns it all and everything that we see about us is his, he can redistribute that as he sees fit at a moment's notice without telling you or asking you what you think about that. Right? So, you know, I often think about the situation that Job found himself in. He was a wealthy man. And because God was wanting to accomplish something in the world, and accomplish for us an example of a righteous way to manage our lives as we stand before God, he took everything away from him. And I mean everything, except his wife, which maybe would have been glad was gone too. That's a different story at that situation. Yeah, that's part of the challenge and part of the purpose there, right? So in that situation, Job finds himself sitting in the ash heap, and all of his worldly goods, all of his possessions, all of his family have been removed from him without notification. And it happened quick, just like that. And Job's response is, you know, God gives, God takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. What a place to find ourselves. And so we need to understand that God can redistribute stuff. It really isn't ours. It's just God's, and he can do with it what he will. So that's the first thing we need to understand. We need to understand that God is sovereign and that God owns everything. The second thing we need to understand is who we are. Because God is sovereign and because he owns everything, what does that make us? How do we stand back and look at ourselves? Well, first off, that means we don't own anything. We own nothing. That we're just managing somebody else's stuff. In this case, it's God's stuff, but he has provided us things that we are to be managing. And so as such, biblically, that makes us stewards. We find in Scripture that a steward was one who just managed somebody else's stuff. They were often owned themselves, actually, but they were given the responsibility of taking care of the master's goods and the master's resources. And so stewards have responsibilities, not rights. If we start to think that we have rights in regard to our material possessions, and in regard to the money that we have been provided, we are deceived because we don't have any rights because it's all God's stuff anyway. Now, as we see in the parable of the talents, the stewards get rewarded for the good management of the master's stuff. That's, well done, my good and faithful servant. What a commendation. And so we are expected to be good stewards, not just stewards, but good stewards of the things that we have been provided. And so if we view ourselves as stewards, I believe, that understanding that we own nothing, then I believe that that will help us avoid some of this struggle that who is it that we're going to serve? Or are we going to serve our material possessions, our money, or are we going to serve God? And so if we understand that it's all God's to start with, it's way easier to serve Him first rather than the things that He has provided us. Thirdly, I believe we need to understand that the primary reason that God has provided us with money, or we need to understand why it is that God's provided us with money and resources to manage. You know, God's not out there just doing stuff willy-nilly without thinking about it. He's got a purpose. I don't care what it is that's going on, God has a purpose. If we believe that He's sovereign, He's in control of all things, then He is moving purposefully through what we see as time and space. Ultimately, we have been provided resources to manage so that we are accomplishing God's purposes, so that we are moving through life, promoting the gospel, and doing things that will bring Him honor and glory. That's why God has provided us those things. We're going to talk a little bit more next week about what this looks like and how this really manifests itself in our lives as we go through and as we handle money, as we handle finances, as we handle our material possession. But we need to understand that God has given them to them not for our glory, not for our self-promotion, but for the promotion of His gospel and His own glory as we go along. So these three things we need to understand. We need to understand who God is, that He is sovereign, that He owns everything. We need to understand who we are. We don't own anything. That makes us stewards. We need to be good stewards. And then lastly, we need to understand why God gives us stuff in the first place. And that is to promote the gospel and His honor and glory. So let's take a moment and look at a couple of real life scenarios here. You find yourself in the parking lot and you approach your car that you, oh, by the way, just purchased. And you find this really nice big door ding in the side of your vehicle. And an anonymous note under the windshield wiper that says, "Sorry, I damaged your vehicle." How do you respond? Okay, so we'll take a minute or two here and allow you to think through this. So how do you respond? What is your first thought as you approach and see that?
Frustrated.
You're frustrated? Okay. What?
Where are my children? Because I have to.
Okay, yeah, blame somebody else. All right, good. Yeah, okay, yes. Upset at the fact of their irresponsibility, right? Upset, again, let's call it for what it was. Cody said it last week, or Casey said it last week. Anger. Anger at that fact. So in situations like that, what do you do? What do you think about, or what do you think about beforehand that will allow you to be walking in the Spirit at that moment? Okay. Yeah, be responsible to cover your insurance. It's God's car. Okay. Anything else?
I have the struggle of what I should be thinking and doing and what I'm likely to be thinking and doing, and I eventually get to where I should be thinking.
Okay.
But
yeah.
That sinful time that I love to have.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm not saying anything.
Is that Donald Good?
Well, no, that's
yeah.
why That's why this is written that way, is our first response, and I don't care who you are, oftentimes our first response is anger, frustration. You disparage the other person's character. You go through all of the things that that God has said don't do, you know, that God calls sin in our lives. But one of the things that we've got to be doing in about these things is that as we are approaching our lives, we need to think about these things when the stress is off. That we need to run through these scenarios in our heads so that we can be formulating and have a plan and have the tools in place to address the issue as it arises. You know, and so as we sit in our living rooms and we think about our cars in these situations, then we can be thinking, well, okay, it is God's car. Okay, God is sovereign. He could have kept the person from swinging their door that wide, or could have had the wind not be blowing at 30 miles an hour that yanked it out of their hand, or all of those things. Could have made the person another a righteous person that says, I will care for the things that I destroy. Or I will, you know, make right the things that I destroy. All of those things God in His sovereignty could do. Okay? So yeah, take some time beforehand to think about these things. All right, let's look at somebody else. Your close friend grumbles a lot about their financial state, making statements like, if only I had what you have, then I could relax and be happy. You know, what questions might you ask them to find out what the issue is? What's going on in their life that may make them say statements like this? So what are some of those questions?
I'd actually kind of examine myself first and wonder if I'm contributing to them stumbling because I'm maybe being a little boastful.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Self-examination. All right, so you've examined yourself, and you are blameless. So, sorry, your conscience is clear, right? Paul says, hey, I've examined myself in this situation, and I know that my conscience is clear. And so you've done that. So what kind of questions would you ask to help get to the root of this kind of issue? Okay. Yeah, what is it that's causing you to desire more? Is it the fact that you are feeling insecure in your position? Is it the fact that you want to have more comfort and ease? Is it the fact that you don't believe that you have enough that you can share with other people in situations that arise where you might have the opportunity to extend charity? I don't know. All of those things would be good questions to ask. Okay, yeah, lastly there, you know, what scriptures do you bring to bear on this? And hopefully you can flip back through the last several pages and say, these are some scriptures that you can bring to bear. And what we're going to talk about next week that you can bring to bear to help people work out and understand those things about money and resources that can be helpful to them.
I think something else in this is relax and be happy. Why are you unhappy? Do you feel the need to relax? Are you overwhelmed?
Okay. Yeah, excellent. You know, is it just a matter of us providing, you know, oh, we've got somebody with need coming across our path. Is this an opportunity for us now to extend ourselves in charity and be unselfish and to help them through that situation? Okay, excellent. Excellent.
Even just being the person here, the person, what they perceive as you being unhappy is being testifying that that's, those things aren't what make you happy.
Okay.
That is what, you know, is the source of contentment and not the things you see around.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so certainly explaining our situation with our possessions and finances, that we have comfort, that we have peace, that we have security because we aren't placing our hope and our finding our security or comfort in those things, but in God. we can explain that to them. Another excellent example. Okay, second one. This is more hard. That would be harder. You discover that your parents are about to lose their home due to what has been communicated to you as a series of unfortunate events, and that they won't have the resources to find a place to stay. What biblical principles come into play in your own life to address this situation? Say again. Okay, yeah. You care for your family, right? I think that is the primary one. There's a lot of others. Well, honor your father and mother is another one, right? Don't care how old they are and how old you are. I believe that command stands, that we are to honor our parents. And so these biblical principles of honoring your father and mother and the principle of that we are to care for our immediate family are important and come into play here. And if we step back at this and transport ourselves back 2,000 years, the expectation was, part of the inheritance structure for the Jews was that the oldest got the most. Now, the reason the oldest got the most, because it was also expected that he was the one that cared for the mom and dad as they moved forward and as they were no longer to care for themselves. So in inheritance, they received, and I forget the specific breakdown, but it was like they received two-thirds and the other folks received the rest so that they could actually provide for the family. That was part of their responsibility. And so those things come into play here. All right. Now, along with that, there is the opportunity to exercise some wisdom here as well. So how do you determine what your response, specific response, should be to that situation?
You have the resources to help them with their house, but if you don't have that resource, then you don't care about your own house.
Okay, so you learn how to balance your resources to do the thing that's commanded, which is to provide for. Okay.
Or just sitting down with them and, you know, finding out, are they really bereft of all resources? It's going over
okay.
With them. Lots of times there's things that they have available to them, they haven't really thought about at that point.
Okay. Yeah, excellent. Opportunity to sit down and to dig a little deeper and see what is behind the situation. And then as you see those roots rather than symptoms, then you can actually apply yourself wisely to caring for the situation that will best minister to them as well as best minister to you. And so, yeah, what are the unfortunate situations? You know, is it foolishness? Is it just God being sovereign? Is it, you know, whatever it is? Yeah, that. So, yeah. Okay, good. Somebody else. Your friend confides in you that they are a couple of months late in paying their utilities, but then kind of right on the heels of that laments about the fact that their spouse isn't ever home because they're working lots of overtime so that they can take a family vacation. What do you share with your friend?
Priorities.
Okay. Where do we find our priorities? In the Word. All right, we're going to talk about that some tomorrow. I will not be here tomorrow, okay? We'll be talking about that some next week, about what some of those priorities are and what God thinks. And then, as we all deal with these situations, right, we often deal with family units, not just the individual. So how do we approach the spouse then? Okay, certainly. Sit down, help them actually commit to paper what their priorities are and how they can make how they can make ends meet and what they need to do. Okay.
The spouse may not be aware of the difficulty
Okay. All right. Yeah. Maybe the spouse isn't aware that there is a situation. Maybe they're a household that their finances are separate, and that individual is responsible for covering the bills. And so it's just a matter of communicating.
Okay? And it could be the person putting pressure on the spouse.
Okay.
Work more.
Certainly. Yeah, well, yeah, there may be that pressure that that the friend here, your friend here, is applying to the situation to, because I deserve a vacation. Again, that goes back to sitting down and working through the issues and understanding where they are and what's going on. And so these are a few situations where I think money in our lives is pervasive. It's just a fact. And so, as we have seen this week, as we look down through, it touches almost all of the things that God calls sin at some level. And so, there are many, many, many opportunities for us to minister the gospel and to minister care and concern for people by how we encourage them to deal with money, but also how we deal with it ourselves. That is extremely important. You know, Christ said that money is an excellent indicator of where our heart is. You know? Don't store up your treasures here on earth, for where your money is, there your heart will be also. It's an excellent indicator in our lives of where our heart is toward God. And so if we can bring this under His control, and the Spirit's control, and apply God's principles and warnings to it, I believe we have large, large, large opportunities to minister the gospel and to minister care to people around us that can help them. That first and foremost, to know where to find their peace, security, and comfort. And second off, that apply the Spirit's work to those things in our lives. And as we do that, hopefully it will keep fresh in our mind this fact that we should not be people who are manifesting materialism in our lives, and that we can use what God has provided to help us not manifest materialism in our lives. All right. Again, on the back, there are a few questions and opportunities to think about this in the comfort of your own home, and so please do that and use these opportunities. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it. See you all here next week.